Virginia L. Brown is being interviewed today on January the 14th, 2004, at the Army Residence Community in San Antonio, Texas. She's a member of the Women's Overseas Service League, which is sponsoring this taping. The interviewer is Ruth Stewart, assisted by Carol Hapgood. Jenny, how about starting in by telling us a little bit, just summarize your early life, where you were born, brought up, and how you got interested in nursing and then eventually the military.
I was born in Johnson City, Tennessee in 1921. I lived in town for a while, and my family moved to the country, and I was out there for a good 10-15 years, and I was hit by a car, and I was hospitalized for a week, and that's what caused me to decide I'd like to be a nurse. And then I was in the hospital a few times after that as a result of this car accident. And we had worked on the farm and walked to school about 3 miles.
Each way?
Each way. Sometimes we got a ride. In the wintertime, a neighbor would take us to school. His daughter was in the same school I was until high school. And then we walked or rode the streetcar. Mm-hmm. Walked a half a mile and then got the streetcar. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from Science Hill High School in 1939 and was in the band and the orchestra. And
what instrument did you play?
In the orchestra, I played the oboe, and in the band, I played the glockenspiel and the cymbals. And
interesting.
So I went a short time to East Tennessee State University as college then at Johnson City. But money was short, so I had to get out. And then I applied for a school of nursing in Memphis, Tennessee, the Baptist Memorial Hospital School of Nursing. I entered in 1940 and graduated in 1943.
And then what? Did you work as a nurse?
I went into the Army.
You went directly into the Army.
Well, I had to wait to pass state boards because we graduated before state boards. And I went home and I worked in an ENT hospital for, I guess, a month. And then I worked in the general hospital there for a couple weeks, and then I went into the Army. July 21st, 1943. And reported to Kennedy General Hospital.
Kinsey?
Kennedy General Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee.
And that was a military hospital?
Yes. No longer there. It was turned into a veterans hospital, and then they tore it down not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So then go on about a little bit about what went on after that when you got really into the Army Nurse Corps activities and tours.
Well, in Kennedy General, it was an interesting assignment because having never been in the military, you wondered what you were going to do. And some of the time we had to get the basics like marching and how to salute, that sort of stuff, after duty hours. And I worked on a surgical ward, and then I was transferred to a GU ward. And I was only there for 6 months. I volunteered to go overseas. And so in December of 1943, I joined the 48th General Hospital, which was stationed there. And about the first part of December, I don't remember the exact date, we went to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. for departing overseas. And we were there getting field clothes and shots. And then we were supposed to go out on the Ile de France on Christmas Day, and we got on board, and then we had to get off because something was wrong with the engine. And so then we went back to Kilmer and stayed a week. And on the New Year's Day, we sailed for England on the Queen Elizabeth.
That was in 44?
January 44. We landed in Glasgow, Scotland on the 10th of January and got on trains and went from there, Scotland, all the way down to the southern part of England, Petworth, England. We were stationed in a camp that had been occupied by the Canadians. And I don't think they ever washed anything, but we were so tired when we got in, it didn't matter. We put towels over the pillows because they smelt so, and just pulled up the blankets and went to sleep. One of the interesting things that went on in Petworth, which most people said they never had, we had strikers to come in and keep our stoves going. They were pot-bellied stoves. And so the enlisted people, whoever was assigned to that, made rounds every so often and made sure your stoves were burning.
What kind of building were you in?
Well, it was like a four-sided quarters. There were two people on each side, and there were four of us there. They were all separated. There's this door that go in.
And all of you were nurses?
Yes. It was interesting to wake up in the middle of the night and see guys poking the stove, but he was very nice, maybe. Then we had nothing to do there but, I guess, get acclimated to England. We took in some of the sights around there a few times and had to walk to breakfast. And I don't remember eating dinner very much, but I guess we did. But it was a
mess hall type of situation, and you really weren't assigned to any nursing duties at
that
point.
No, not then.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed
there. How long were you there?
I guess about a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got on a train and went up to Swindon, England. And I don't remember the dates. But we lived with English families.
Oh.
And it was rather interesting and you know, apprehensive a little bit, because they put us in a truck with our baggage, and they'd go along a street, and they wanted one or two, it depended on where you were sitting. I was sitting by myself, I guess, and I got selected to go into this house, and it's really scary, because you didn't know these people. They didn't give us any phone number to call if we got into trouble. And the people were very nice, but it's rather interesting to go into a place that you don't know the people and you're going to stay there a week or two. The people I stayed with, I think the gentleman worked for the railroad company. There's a man, his wife, and one daughter, 12-year-old. This lady, they were very nice to me. We were not allowed to eat with them unless we were particularly invited. And then we had to take some coffee or whatever, get it from the mess hall.
Why were you assigned to live with families?
There's no billets there in Swindon.
Okay. Well, then after a week, what happened? I mean, you said...
We were there for a month, I think.
Oh, longer than I was thinking, a week. But
no, my.
So, but you didn't stay on in Swinburne then longer than that?
No, no.
Okay.
But while there, some of us got detailed. I got detailed to the British Air Force Hospital, which was near there. We were a week's duty. And now they did things a little different than we do. like they give all their baths in the afternoon. In the mornings, the nurse goes by and straightens up the beds, and they get breakfast. And then about 10 o'clock, somebody's assigned to make the toast and tea, because they got tea and toast every morning at 10 o'clock. Sometimes we were detailed to do that. I don't remember doing very much there. But they had a matron who was head of the ward and a couple nurses. And lunchtime was interesting, because we all went to lunch at the same time, sat at a big table about this, and there was one lady sat at the head table, and you didn't eat anything till she did. It was all passed around. And then you might be hungry, but you didn't dare take more than one helping of food, because they didn't have, there wasn't a lot there.
Interesting.
And at the end of the day, a bus picked us up and took us back to our village. And I don't remember that little town this hospital was in, but I think there were about four of us got detailed to that hospital. And the interesting part, too, in Swindon, is the lady did not want, at least me, coming back to the house after breakfast. She did not want me coming there in the afternoon. So our things and everything closed at 4:30, so you were in a quandary, because they had high tea at 4-something and dinner at 8. So you just went home or went there about dark and hoped that you didn't disturb them too much. But otherwise, we had been going to the Red Cross, the nurses. But then they said, well, we couldn't come back there anymore. I don't know why they thought we disturbed anybody, but we didn't. So then we ended up finding a pub that had a, you know, in England they have these other rooms that we could stay in during the morning.
Hang out.
Day. Yeah. We used to get food on the street. They had fish and chips, which were delicious. I know this lady was that I stayed with, Mrs. Beeson, asked me to dinner one night, and she asked me what I wanted for dinner. Well, what do you say to somebody who doesn't have?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I don't know, but how about fish and chips? And she says, well, where do you get them? I said, they're just right down the street there. And she said, oh. So for dinner that night, I think we took butter, and she said I could invite a friend. Butter and, I don't know, coffee, I think. And we had, I'd never had it. It was pressed tongue, great big thing on the table, gelatin. And pretty good.
Mm.
I thought, if you don't like it, you got to eat it anyhow. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then I asked for a cup of coffee, and that was a sad mistake.
Mm.
Because they had coffee, like extract, in a bottle. And they had a lot of water, and they poured a tablespoon full of that in it. And I thought, oh my.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to drink it. It's difficult. But.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very nice, because my feet always got cold, and they didn't have heat at night, I guess. So she loaned me a pair of her husband's wool socks. And she'd bring me tea every morning before I got out of bed. But by the time I got myself awake to drink it, it was cold. But it was very nice of her to
mm-hmm.
bring that up. And she was nice enough to write my family and tell them I was there. And
mm-hmm.
what a nice daughter they had.
Good credentials.
Yeah. And then from Swindon, we went to Winchester, England, and we took over a hospital. It was a general hospital. And we were there when D-Day started. It was interesting. About a couple of days before all the troops were going over, planes were flying over our hospital, wingtip to wingtip, as far as you could see.
And where was this now?
Winchester.
Okay.
And we had Quonset-type hospitals. you know, for. And then we began to get patients whenever going over to France. I guess some of them got in the water, some of them aren't, but we did get them from the coast of France. Rather interesting because I guess somebody was sorting them up at the when they came in, but we'd get patients, and all the doctors were scheduled to go to surgery, and our ward officer was going, or went. We didn't know we were getting patients, so I was staying one day to help a nurse admit some patients. And about 8 o'clock, the supervisor came down and asked me what I was doing there, and I said, well, I was helping her get these patients in. Well, you better go home because you have to come back at 11. So we worked 8 hours on and 8 hours off for about a week. Our corpsman, I think, had to work 12 and 12 or something. Because sometimes when we weren't busy, they could go in the living room and have a nap. But there were no, I guess there were some controls, but when a patient would go to surgery from your ward, they'd come back and there was no indication what ward they were going to do. So I know they were wheeling in a patient in our ward, and I saw him and I said, he doesn't belong here. So he went across the hall. But
the nurses themselves had to do the controlling about the dispatching, yes, if you will.
And the ward officer, when he went to surgery, he said to the other nurse and I, because there was no ward officer on the ward at the time, do whatever you have to do, pain medicine and whatever, I'll cover you when I get back. But they sent usually they'd written orders when they came from surgery, so that was no problem. Mm-hmm. They evacuated patients pretty soon, so we'd get them. Of course, you had to keep the lights out, so we were using lanterns. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this later when that's cut off. But we had to get them ready, and then they'd come in at night, and we'd have to strip off their clothes and help them get ready for surgery. Most of them were gone. Then I don't remember the date that someone else was replacing our hospital, but we went down on the coast of England for a couple weeks. But I was detailed back to that hospital to work for 2 weeks. And so when we got back to our unit on the coast, well, our stuff was all packed, and we went to Southampton, shipping over. This is August. We left the 10th of August, I think, and landed in France the 17th of August. And that was an interesting thing. It was on a British ship, and if you weren't seasick, you would after you got smelling the fish that they had for breakfast. But to get off of that ship, you had to go down the side on a rope, you know, one of those mesh things, and get a bouncing LST boat that's sitting at the mirror. And on you, you had a purse, a pistol belt, a backpack, a bedroll, a helmet. So you hoped you landed when it came up and not when it missed.
Pretty tricky.
Then we landed in, I know it wasn't a week we were on that ship, but sometime about the 17th of August or something. And we, first off, we went to a field, and we always wondered why they wanted us to learn how to set up pup tents. Well, in this area, all the nurses had to put up a pup tent, two of you to a tent. And when it rained, if you touched it, it leaked in. But apparently, somebody flew over and saw all these tents out there, and the directions came back to get us in under a big tent. So we all had to move into a tent. We already, I gave us cots.
How long were you in the pup tent?
Oh, I don't think more than a week. But it's interesting because we got invited to a few parties, and we had some pretty big nurses in the unit. And probably this is just funny, but I used to get tickled because most of us could get dressed in the pup tent, but they couldn't get the girdles on outside. So here they are outside the tent pulling on these girdles. And we went to a party one night, and we were supposed to be back at 9 o'clock. Well, we started way before that. But you had to drive without lights, and I guess the driver got lost because we didn't get back until 1 o'clock, and we all got restricted to the post for the duration. But the commanding officer went out, and he didn't get back one time either, so our restrictions was lifted. I guess he thought we were fibbing or something. But out in the field and eating out of mess kits that you dumped in a barrel to clean, and the bees were swarming around. And but it's interesting, I guess the commanding officer got mad at a position about talking about the food, so he made him mess officer. And it was pretty good food after that. And we, I don't know how long we stayed there, but then we got on a, in getting baths, we rode in a truck for about 30 minutes to the showers. We got them about every other day. Of course, you're about as dirty when you got back as you went because of all the dust and stuff. But they were in open tents, and the guys were up there controlling the water and looking down. So, but it was nice to have a bath out instead of out of a helmet. We moved from there, and we were put on a train, and it seemed like it took us forever to get from there to our next field activity, which was outside of Paris. And an interesting thing happened there. The Red Cross lady asked me if I wanted to ride up in the train with her. I said, sure. So she asked the commanding officer and the chief nurse if we could go, and they said yes. Well, we had to have a male officer with us, too. But we didn't have time to get on that train when it pulled out. And here we are back here in the middle of no place. And what tickled me, I guess I was silly, is this officer who was with us had a whistle, and he was blowing a whistle, and the train was going.
As though he could stop it.
The train finally stopped. I don't know why they were going and starting and going, but we got on the back end of the train, and the train commander, whoever was commanding, came back and said, oh, get on up there if you're going to ride. So we got to ride on the train until it stopped at the next water tank, which wasn't very long. And then we got back with our regular group. But on the train, some people had seats, but we were like in caboose and to sleep. They gave us stretchers to put on. You're better off on the floor because the air just came up through the stretchers, but that was better. Fairly comfortable. Next place we got was in another field outside of Paris, and it was in a potato patch. They put up tents, and you'd have to, if your cot was unsteady, you'd look around and you're sitting on a potato. Our rations had not come with us. They had gone up to Liège, France, so we were sort of on skimpy rations. Two meals a day. And so one day in a potato patch, we asked the mess officer, could we have French fried potatoes? Well, if we dug them, it's surprising the number of people didn't know how to dig potatoes. But we got the potatoes. And then we went up and there's nobody to peel them. So there are about four or five nurses. We peeled potatoes and got them so they could French fry them. And we had French fried potatoes out of crazy. Those were delicious. And shortly after that, I got detailed to go into the 108th General Hospital in Paris. It was a week after Paris had was liberated. And we stayed there about a week, and then they called us back, and we moved in to a hospital in Paris, the Les Brogères, which is right back of the Gare Lenord railroad station. And it was, I guess we could get, I don't remember how many patients. At one time on my ward, I had 50 patients on that one ward because it was two beds down the middle of the center and on each side. And that was an orthopedic ward. And
so then how long were you in France overall?
When we landed in 44 to May of June of 45.
So almost a year. And then after you left France, 45 was after...
From Paris we went to Marseille. Mm-hmm. Some of us were, you know, at that time, you got points. And the higher points were allowed to come home, and those that broke up the unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the 69th Station Hospital,
mm-hmm.
down the Riviera. And I was there about a month, and then we came back to Marseille. And I think we sailed on 1st of September, because I got home the 15th of September.
Okay, and then you stayed in the Army, though, after
No, I got
that.
Out.
You didn't. Okay.
1946, off all the leave and stuff. I got out.
But then you went back in later, did you?
Yeah, 1953. In the meantime, I went to school, and I taught school.
Nursing or otherwise?
Nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to the Baptist Hospital, taught mm-hmm. there for, I think it was from 49 to 53.
Mm-hmm. What decided you to go back in the Army?
More pay.
It's a good reason.
I was in the reserves, and I went on reserve duty, I think it was to McClellan. And the lady who was in charge of the assignments was there, and she said, why don't you come back in the Army? And I said, I don't know. So she quoted the salary $100 more on the month than I was making, and she said I could be, they needed instructors, and I could go instructor in school. I said, that sounded great. So I put in my resignation from the Baptist Hospital and reported in the Walter Reed, 5th of December, 1953.
Mm-hmm. And then when did you finally retire from the Army?
1980.
And in that time you were stateside most of that time?
No. I was at Walter Reed at that time for 2 years. Then I went to Korea for a year, and then I went to Japan. It was about 10 months. And then in Japan for a year. Then I went stateside for 2 years to recruiting. From recruiting, I went back to Walter Reed, and I was there 6 years because I went back to school and worked there. Time ago.
That's okay. You covered a variety of tours then during that period.
for a year. And then Fort Bragg, Fort Ord, back overseas to Port Okinawa, back to, I came back, Fort Sam, from Okinawa, I mean from Fort Ord to Okinawa. Okinawa to Fort Ord, Fort Sam, and from Fort Sam to Europe, and Europe back to SGO in 1978.
So you certainly covered a lot of territory in your career, and all of that was in various aspects of nursing, including
yes.
teaching, recruitment.
Supervisor, chief nurse, of health services command here, mm-hmm. and then assistant chief to the Army Nurse Corps.
Mm-hmm. So then, since you retired from the military,
I've been involved with WSL. I've been involved with the Army Medical Museum. I've been involved with my hospital from overseas, 48 General. I've been involved in needlepoint, sewing, quilting.
We're now going to proceed a little further with your post, or your last time, ending time in the Army Nurse Corps, and some of the things that occurred during that period where you got some significant recognition.
During World War II, we had only, nurses had relative rank. There were some regular Army nurses, but there were no nurses such as we knew of as reserves. I think it was 1947 that nurses received rank. But when we were leaving the Army, we were separated. We were not discharged, so we could be called back at any time. Also, I guess they didn't realize what nurses could contribute, because we had one commander when we started said that he did not need nurses. All he needed was doctors and corpsmen. Later on, after receiving patients from D-Day and Battle of the Bulge and that sort of thing, he had a staff meeting and said he was wrong. Nurses were essential and did a wonderful job. Rank at that time was a little different than what we have today, in that I don't think they had any routine way of promoting, because we had been overseas a year. In our unit, there was one captain, one lieutenant, and the rest of us were second lieutenant. We had two pre-Pearl Harbor nurses in the unit. And when we began to get nurses in our unit who had only been in 6 months and been promoted to first lieutenant, we asked what was happening to us. So our nurses, we did have a meeting with the chief nurse, and we suggested that the pre-Pearl Harbor nurses be promoted first and then whoever they wanted promoted. We apparently had some others, because they asked us who we wanted to be promoted, and you would think it was an open discussion, but I found out differently that when I got promoted, in that time all I did was post it on the chief nurse's door. You didn't happen to go by there, somebody tell you, you didn't know. But I went in and got mine, and I met the chief of professional activities and my ward officer in the war, on the road. And they didn't say congratulations. They said, well, you'd been promoted earlier if you'd learned to keep your mouth shut. I thought, okay. So I got promoted to first lieutenant there.
And that was in France, while you were still in France.
Then throughout my career, I've been promoted time. I went in as a reserve nurse and elected to join the regular army in 58. And I retired as a regular army officer. It's interesting because nurses were not often recognized by awards. My first one was 1965, and then I got them after that. One of the things that I'm very proud of is I was selected as the Nurse of the Year by the DAR in 1980. That's a program that the Army Nurse Corps is involved in. And I also was very surprised and very appreciative. I received the Distinguished Service Medal, DSM, which in the Army Nurse Corps is usually the Chief of the Corps. Got it. I was the first nurse to get it after that. There have been a couple of others since that have gotten the DASR. But. That's good. And also when you retire from the Surgeon General's office with 30 years service, they give you an Army Medical Department medallion. You've got 30 years in you.
So you have had an exceedingly distinguished career in the Army Nurse Corps throughout your career. Have there been any special emotions or feelings that have evolved in relation to being in war as a nurse from that experience?
No, except you wonder how the patients are going to do when they get home, like they come. I was only in World War II. I'm sure we got patients at other hospitals that were in war. But these were frostbites. The people had feet that were really injured. We got people who lost arms and legs. People who prisoners of war we got back, and you just wondered how they're going to make it, what kind of things, how they would react when they got home.
Mm-hmm. Did it change you in any way?
More concerned about your patients,
mm-hmm.
realizing what they'd been through, and sometimes they'd be a little upset. I can remember having a patient. He was a paratrooper. And those people are always very proud of their shoes. They're always shined. You can see it's up there. And they were sitting at the foot of the bed, and I happened to hit him. Well, he got very upset. And I thought, well, there's no sense of doing anything because he's really having problems.
That was his only control,
yeah.
Was his boots. Yeah.
Things like that, you often wonder. I always wondered, too, because, and I guess I could understand, because I had some patients, I happened to be on night duty on an officer's and enlisted ward, and they were ready to go back to duty. They went AWOL to get back to their unit, and I'm sure it was because they didn't want to go through a separation center or where they were reassigned to another unit. But I'm sure nothing was done to them once they got back to their unit.
Back in service.
Well,
really?
They were in Paris and they went from there back to combat. We had some that
were in Paris. The AWOL was ignored at that point.
Yeah.
Interesting how rules get bent.
Well, if they went back to the unit, they were AWOL from the hospital, but not AWOL from their unit, so.
Yeah, yeah, can do that, yeah. Well, thank you so much for all this information. It's really very valuable to have all this recorded and have it in our Veterans History Project. And we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.